mass killer Anders Behring Breivik was once regarded as an angelic choir boy who wouldn't harm a fly. So what turned him into a hate-filled assassin who went on to commit one of the worst single-handed massacres in history? Tune into The Agenda to find out what was the trigger which sent him on the path to terrorism. There is a growing sense of unease in Norway that police failed to spot the warning signs which led to the horrific massacre of innocent people. Now police forces across Europe and America are being asked to examine the threat posed by right-wing groups which have flourished in a recession-driven climate fueled by Islamophobia. In particular, detectives are now investigating what links, if any, between suspected terrorist Anders Behring Breivik and other extreme right-wing organisations, including the English Defence League and the American Tea Party. While many in the Western media are keen to portray Breivik as a mentally deranged man who acted alone, the truth is quite different. It is now emerging he had developed ideological and communication links with organised far-right networks. In the wake of the terror attacks in Oslo and Utøya, today's Agenda asks the question, Europe, why has the threat of the far-right been ignored by police? Who or what radicalised terrorist suspect Anders Behring Breivik? That's the burning question today as Norway's police work with their counterparts in the Czech Republic, Luxembourg, Britain and several other European countries to try and establish the exact terror threat posed by far-right groups. Our first guest is right-wing political analyst and journalist Bruce Anderson, whose strong opinions often offend but are rarely ignored. Next to him is Roger Cotterill, a counter-terrorism analyst and former intelligence officer in the British military. He believes the terror suspect was not acting alone. And our final guest, redoubtable Isaac Biggio, who has read and analysed the 1,500-page manifesto written by the killer, has his own views as well. But Bruce, I want to start with you first. Do you feel less safe today than you did last week before we'd heard of the name Breivik?
No. I mean, clearly there is a risk in modern societies, especially in large urban areas, of terrorism from various sources. I think we can't all live in cotton wool. If we all felt at risk, none of us would ever get into a motor car, get on an aeroplane, leave the house perhaps, leave the cellar. No, we mustn't get this out of proportion. One argument for not putting this man to death by torture, and if that were proposed, I wouldn't be signing any petition for mercy. One argument for not killing him is to examine him, analyse him, and compel and try and work out why he became this monster that he did become. And I hope the Norwegian authorities will be tough. My view is, I gather conditions in a Norwegian prison are perfectly pleasant. I would make the fellow answer questions, and if he didn't, I would lock him in a darkened room and put him on bread and water until he did.
Well, of course, under Norwegian law, he is still a suspect at the moment, although you appear to have just tried him publicly. However,
he's entitled to the rights that I know.
One of the things that you mentioned, though, Bruce, there, you referred to terrorism. Now, this is a word that, for some reason, the British media has avoided, apart from the early hours of this atrocity unfolding. The Sun, it could be argued, upheld the finest Murdoch traditions and came out with a front page. I think we've got a copy that we can show to our viewers at the moment. And the front page was, you know, Al-Qaeda atrocity. The Washington Post, they ran with the same as did the New York Times, and a lot of media jumped on the bandwagon that it must be an Islamist
threat.
Well, that
was everyone's assumption for about half an hour or so. I mean, people assume, because of the climate we live in, where there has been Al-Qaeda terrorism in European cities. Some people were assuming, but there's a semantic argument. Can one loner, and as far as we know at the moment, mm-hmm. he was alone. He may have had networks, he may have mm-hmm. communicated on the internet with all
but
sorts of.
But what about the use of the word terrorism? I mean, we've got one agenda viewer who wrote to the BBC and said, Why have you dropped the use of the word terrorism?
The argument might be that one lone individual does not make a is not a terrorist. Terrorism is a network.
They did
the
respond.
IRA were terrorists, the Ba'ath terrorists, the Al-Qaeda.
Uh-huh.
You need perhaps an organisation in order to be classed as a terrorist.
The BBC did respond. I've got four pages here. We understand you felt our reports regarding the attacks in Norway were referred to terrorist attacks until we received updated information that the suspect wasn't Muslim, and we note your concerns, and it goes on that they've forwarded this to the BBC newsroom. But there's still, Roger, no explanation, satisfactory explanation from the BBC why they dropped the word terrorist as soon as they realised that this was not an attack by Muslims.
Yes, it's very worrying, and unfortunately it fits a pattern. If you recall, a few years back there was an ex-BNP member in the Northwest who was actually preparing rising in his house. He was stockpiling weapons. I think he got something like 3 or 5 years in jail for that, which if he'd been a Muslim, we all know he'd have been sent down for 30 years. What has happened over the last 25 years is this, that very early on, in the early 1990s, when MI5 was rebranding itself post the Cold War, there did seem to be a concerted effort by the authorities to target those fascist organisations like Combat 18 that were actually involved in the creation of terrorist cells. People are inspired particularly by the writings of William Pierce in the Turner Diaries, whom this character, by the way, in Norway has quoted virtually verbatim. But once the Combat 18 people have been locked up, everyone's attention went away from fascist right-wing groups, from fascist terrorism. The more that fascists moved into mainstream politics and started to play the democratic card, first with the rise of the BNP, then with the rise of the English Defence League, they were somehow left alone to sort of nurture and exploit the situation.
Do you think that this is neglect by the police?
I think it's neglect by the police. I think it's neglect by politicians. I think it's neglect by the media.
Aren't people entitled to form organisations such as the BNP and the EDL as long as they do not break the law?
Well, that's Brooks, that's incredibly pedantic. If you were actually living in a working class community, you were Jewish, you were Asian, you were Muslim, and you lived in fear of these people every day, or you were a socialist, you live in fear of these people every day of your life, their very capacity to organise poses a physical threat to you.
Well, it doesn't.
Now, these organisations...
There was all the difference in organisation and physical threat. That's all.
I think you've got to grow up there.
So what did you think, Bruce, of the banning of the Al-Majroun group, this fringe Muslim group that really offended people in the English town where the coffins of the dead were brought through?
Well, I think their behaviour was appalling. I'm thoroughly in favour, by the way, of freedom of speech, including freedom of speech.
Government was wrong to ban Al-Majroun?
I haven't looked at it in detail. I don't know. I would only ban a group if it was really trying to organise violence. I think organising...
Or incite violence.
But by that, I don't mean incite violence by saying there are too many immigrants. I think someone who just says there were too many immigrants, that's legitimate. If he says, whenever you see a person of Muslim appearance, attack them, that they're then jail, and for no short period.
Well, I want to go quickly over to Isaac before we go on to the next stage. Isaac, do you think that the police should tighten up their security? Have they got something to be worried about in Britain as well as Europe?
Well, it's very strange because the police knew that this guy was purchasing tons of fertilizer. The guy had a Facebook, he had his own list. He put his video before the attack, you know, and he was shooting people for 90 minutes without any intervention and after two hours of bombs.
I'll come back to you in a minute, but in the spring of 1999 in London, the capital was hit by a wave of terror attacks, and these were unleashed by self-confessed Nazi David Copeland. Mohammed Walji went to the scene of one of those attacks where three people died and more than 30 were injured to get the public view about the Norwegian bomber. This is what he discovered.
I'm here in Soho in central London today to ask members of the public what they think about the emergence of the far right following the terrorist attacks in Norway. So let's hear what they had to say. In the wake of the terrorist attack in Norway, do you fear similar plots by far right groups in the UK?
I don't think we can ever rule them out. we can't rule it out anywhere now, I guess. I mean, after all of the many terrorist attacks that have been going on all around the world, how can we feel that we're safe here as well?
Why did many elements of the media avoid using the word terrorism when describing what happened in Norway?
I'm not aware that they did.
I think possibly because when you say the word terrorist, it kind of brings to mind an organisation, a group of people that have plotted things. He was no less a terrorist.
Do you think the police have ignored the dangers presented by Europe's far right, for example, Geert Wilders, and should an EDL march next month be banned in Tower Hamlets or not?
I don't know about that. You ban someone having a public voice, you create further dissatisfaction. They turn it round and saying that their voice is not being heard. I think it's much better to engage with, in discussion with them, and actually prove through discussion just how unreasonable and objectionable a lot of their views are.
Well, Isaac, you were actually caught up in the Brixton bombing. David Copeland had also attacked the black community in London.
Not only the black, the Latin American community, the gay community. In Brixton, the bomb was not only the blacks, also the Caribbeans and the Latinos.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so, I mean, you've experienced some of the terror of these right-wing fanatics. Do you think that this attack in Norway is a one-off, or do you think it's part of a much more sinister movement?
Well, it's very difficult to predict what is going to happen, but at least this guy, in his 1,500-page book, described an entire organization like it's a nemesis of Al-Qaeda, no? Instead of calling for Muslims against Christians, he talked about a crusade against the Muslim, and he described like he has a network of members. He has Serbian militaries involved in the organization. He described a quite sophisticated organization, and his book is not the production of an actor. It's very well produced.
Because his solicitor is saying that he's insane, and the police.
But the solicitor is from the Labour Party, you know. He's not his own solicitor.
And really, the police seem very keen, as do a lot of other organizations, to portray this man as a lone, deranged, insane man.
But the problem is this, for example, no? Al-Qaeda, you can infiltrate, you can monitor, because most of the members are outside London or outside Europe. These kind of people live in Europe. They have some electoral base. For example, the Progressive Party in Norway have a quarter of the votes, you know. So they have, I don't say that the Progressive Party is terrorist, but I say that it incubates these kind of people. So it's a very dangerous situation, because we can have inside the people that vote for the BNP or the UKIP, people that have these ideas, and they can operate freely.
What did you get from this 1,500-page document?
What I get? I see that it's the attempt of creating an Al-Qaeda, but of Christians against Muslims. All the worst people in the world, according to this book, are the Muslims. The Muslims are guilty
he
for everything.
He did, in fact, name some writers who obviously inspired him, that he admired, including Melanie Phillips. I'm happy to say you weren't in the list, Bruce, but
it's not Melanie's fault that he read her stuff. I mean, I disagree with Melanie on many things vehemently. I believe in freedom of speech.
Well, could it not be argued that she might have radicalised him? Or
you can never know what influences a nutcase. The logic of what you were saying.
So you think he's a nutcase?
Or a loner, a bad and mad. Logic of what you were saying is that we should ban any expression of political views or outside a mainstream.
Why are you convinced he's a loner?
Well, no evidence has been produced yet to the contrary.
But he talks about the EDL, he talks about the Tea Party movement in America.
I don't suppose they talk about him.
Whose views actually are mirrored in a lot of his writings.
Well, they did not. Nobody that we know.
And then we have a European MP, an Italian MP, who said a lot of what he said makes sense.
Yeah. Well, this is not the time to say that. I'm not saying everything he said was senseless, but there was no justification for anything that he did in murdering all these people. But people can be anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, They're not responsible for him. There could be Muslims who believe in imposing Sharia law. They're not responsible for Al-Qaeda. Unless you're going to say that any expression of political views outside a middle ground, anything on the far left, anything on the far right, any Islamic arguing for Sharia law,
so
unless you're going to say all of these people should be banned.
So you're convinced that he's a loner?
Well, I want to see the evidence.
You don't think he's a loner?
Not at all. I don't. I think that we've got to remember that in 1995, when Tim McVeigh carried out the Oklahoma bombing, the consensus was that he was acting alone. And yet, as well as being immersed in actual militia activity, which he'd been involved in for several years, he was principally advised, inspired by certain groups and certain writings on the extreme right and the fascist right, particularly including William Pierce's novel The Turner Diaries, which our friend over in Norway has actually quoted verbatim. Now, the strategy proposed there is to create a strategy of tension based on the ideas of an Italian fascist called Roberto Fiore from the 1980s, whereby acts of terrorism are supposed to create terror in society, which an electorally based fascist organisation can exploit. Now, part of the strategy that was pursued by Combat 18 in the 1990s was to create self-contained cells. You can have a self-contained cell of one person, but it doesn't mean there isn't some kind of institution.
Combat 18, of course, was headquartered at one stage in Norway.
Absolutely. Denmark and Norway. They used Denmark and Norway precisely because the kind of liberal laws that existed there enabled them to produce their literature, which actually would have been illegal in Britain because of the incitement of racial hatred laws, which I'm glad to say we have in the United Kingdom. Now, certain people don't have a right to free speech. I will let you in a moment, Bruce. But getting back to the main point, I think there is an organisational link between this guy and the other groups that he mentions.
Well, the EDL have distanced themselves from his actions, obviously. But Isaac, this march on September the 3rd, in Tower Hamlets by the EDL, do you think the British government should ban it?
Well, I think I don't see that it should be banned. We should have to organize a march 20, 30, 50 times bigger in support of the Muslim community, in support of the immigrant, in support of the Democrats, and to show to the British people that we have 1 million people against them, you know.
Bruce's reaction to that. Before we do, we have to head to the agenda's electronic post room, where Mohammed Walji selects the best Facebook responses to today's topic.
Thanks, Yvonne. Well, today's subject exposed a few raw nerves judging from the massive response we received from agenda viewers. Using Facebook to vent your feelings, it's obvious many of you fear the terror attack in Norway is not a one-off. But Abdul Rahman Ahmed from Dubai puts the blame squarely on newspaper columnists and bloggers. He says, "I believe you should focus on those writers who are motivating and inspiring these right-wingers to hate Muslims and pushing them to the edge. It's high time to expose these Zionist writers who are fueling the hate towards Muslims." Aisha Razak from Nottingham focuses her concerns in another direction. She says, "I think it's the start of many to come, so the police must clamp down on extreme right-wing fascist groups now. It's better to act now than let Europe suffer in the long run." Londoner Mikdad Versi asks, "How many people have been killed by Al-Qaeda-related attacks in Europe? Report after report shows the dangers of the right-wing fanatics and Islamophobes, and until Europe deals with this, rather than pandering to this racism and bigotry, this will remain the largest threat to our liberal society." Carrie Clifford from Toronto adds, "In the West, the concept of terrorism is skewed. I have witnessed liberal people telling me that only Muslims are terrorists. In the States, we have a huge gang problem. How many people have been killed or terrorized from that?" Rayan Ahmed Kai from Wales certainly doesn't believe in turning the other cheek. He says, "They should give Ratko Mladic a death penalty and dump him in the ocean, and send the Anders Behring Breivik to Guantanamo Bay to be beaten and waterboarded." And Shane Ali wraps up the debate from where it began. He agrees that the Norway massacre is not a one-off terror attack. He says, "There is a simmering hate and intolerance which is brewing daily in our society, and the media are predominantly responsible for this. They have got into the psyche of people, and many people have jumped onto the bandwagon of Islamophobia and are justifying their feelings of hatred towards us Muslims. They apparently feel they are the victims in all of this and that they need a voice of their own." Well, that's all we've got time for. Back to you, Yvonne.
Thanks, Mohammed. Well, in the last few minutes, let's get our guest's concluding remarks. Bruce.
For 60 years, 70 years, it started in Germany in the 20s, the extreme right and the extreme left have come together almost to try and dissolve the liberal middle. They've tried to focus attention on themselves. They've often used violence. The important thing as response is not to panic, not to get things out of proportion, to assert and uphold liberal values, including freedom of speech, including for people whose views one finds repugnant, but to say that once that speech becomes incitement to violence, then it must be punished. But we mustn't. These things will happen again. Some crazy individual, some computer geek, the sort of people who murdered all those students in America a few years ago. Something in our society seems to produce that. If it could be identified and some political antibiotic found,
well, still coming can't. From the point of view that it's a lone individual, Roger?
Okay, it's not a lone individual. Fascism is a very serious problem, both in Britain and throughout Europe. It's been nurtured by the paralysis of the left at a time when there's a major economic crisis and where there's social exclusion, which enables fascist organisations to appear like a radical alternative. It's been nurtured by state policy, particularly by relentless racist immigration policies, particularly since the Asylum Act of 1993, and above all by the illegal war, so-called war against terror, that's been waged since the early part of this century. These have created conditions, as has the erosion of formal democracy in our country, the rise of a state executive, the fact that there is no significant ideological difference between...
You're expressing a contempt for liberal democracy and decent values.
I'm saying that the liberal values are being eroded by British capitalism and the state itself. The punchline is, to come back to Bruce's point, is that when one comes to these organisations, there should be resistance. I would like to see the EDL march banned. If it isn't, I would like to see a major mobilisation against it, and I will participate
you
in
want
that
violence.
Match. I don't want anything, but I realised that the fascism in the 1930s were defeated at
Cambridge. I think two very polarising views there, which are still continuing, if we can just get your conclusion
this guy is not an individual action. It is a result of a lot of propaganda against the Muslim, against the immigrant, is the growing of the far right. He's one of the expressions, and I think that other people are going to follow his path. And he wants that. That is why he published in this book how he prepared the bomb.
So who's radicalized him then? Is it right-wing columnists, or is it the people from the Tea Party, or is it the actions of the EDL? Who has turned this choir boy into a mass killer?
It's all the propaganda. It's all these right-wing parties, all these anti-immigrant parties that put all the problems of our society are the Muslims and are the immigrants. This is what is making these people to grow and to have some appeal. I'm absolutely sure that this guy has some appeal in a lot of these thousands of people that are in the ADL, in the Front National, inside the Progressive Party.
They are not murderers. He may have some of his views they may share, but they are not murderers.
I am not asking the police to ban the EDL. What I am asking is that when the EDL march, we should do a march, not a violent march, a march 10, 20, 30, 50 times bigger to defend the Muslim, because these people are terrorizing the Muslim. I am living with a lot of Muslims, and they are terrorizing the Muslims. When the EDL march, I was in Luton. How all the Muslims were panicking.
Well, let's see what the response will be on September the 3rd in Tower Hamlets. And that just remains for me to say a very big thank you to each and every one of our guests today. And we'll see you all soon on the next agenda.